Welcome to the Inspiration 316 show hosted by John Beener, founder of Wise Counsel. John shares the inspiring and shocking miracles of how Jesus Christ is changing lives, families, organizations, and nations in this chaotic world. These are the true stories the media won't cover because they defy the shocking bad news they are selling. Stay tuned to be inspired.
Well, welcome. This is John Beener. You're listening to the Inspiration 316 show. We're excited you've joined us. Again, we've got a really good show again today. I personally pick these clips. We've got audio clips. Again, we're about the good news of Jesus Christ, things you're not going to hear in the everyday media stories, not emphasized at least. We're not about who murdered who shot who, who's being investigated, who bombed who. That's not what we're about. The good news of Jesus Christ, he takes negatives and turns them into positives. He can use evil and turn it into good because he has a long-term plan and for purpose for all of us. Today, our show is about a world coming to Christ. Can you believe it? It's really happening around the world, and the media doesn't tell you. They don't know about it. They don't even understand it. First story is about a Muslim who's bringing millions of people to Christ through his satellite teachings. The next is about what's booming in China. Then we've got a story of a Sunni Muslim becomes a Christian pastor, incredible testimony. And we've got our sponsor, Dick Erickson with SunTire. We thank you for him sponsoring us. Our great Christian stories about what he's doing to help people. Then we've got a Hindu woman coming to Christ, a Jewish lawyer coming to Christ, and finally a lesbian or gay lady coming to Christ. It's a gay from the gay lesbian movement. Let's get started here with millions of Muslims are coming to Christ in the Middle East. They're seeing dreams of knowing Jesus Christ. And here's an Egyptian Coptic, Zazera Boutros, being interviewed and teaching and talking about, again, what's happening in the Middle East.
In 1979, Iranian pastors tell me there were probably about 500 known Shia Muslim converts to Christianity in the entire country. 500. Today, having interviewed more than 40 Iranian Christian ministry leaders, they tell me that there are at least 1 million Shia Muslim converts to Christianity in the country. They expect there to be 10,000 new house churches planted in Iran just over the next 12 to 18 months.
The phenomenon is not limited to Iran. In Saudi Arabia, there are now more than 100,000 followers of Jesus Christ. In Pakistan, there are now more than 2.5 million Christians. In Egypt, there are also more than 2.5 million Christians. In Sudan, there are actually now more than 5 million followers of Christ. Radio and satellite television broadcasting is one of the ways the gospel message is being heard in countries whose governments or Islamic authorities fiercely oppose the communication of the Christian message. Rosenberg calls this the air war.
When it comes to the air war, the leading revivalist revolutionary is an Egyptian Coptic priest by the name of Father Zechariah Boutros.
It is time for the church to stand up with courage and conviction and say that the power of the Holy Spirit, Islam is not the answer. Jihad is not the way. Jesus is the way. Jesus is the truth. Jesus is the life. And no man or woman can come to the Father except through faith in Jesus Christ. This is the message of John 14, 6. This is the message of the entire New Testament.
He is now being watched by 50 million Muslims a day throughout the Middle East. Now, he's got this 90-minute program where he not only explains Christian truths, but he also deconstructs the person of Muhammad, as well as the teachings of the Quran and some extra Islamic teachings known as the Hadith. And he explains from his perspective why they're wrong and why Jesus is right.
Now is not the time to hide from the Muslim world. Now is the time to take the gospel of Jesus Christ to every man. woman, and child on the planet to every Jew and every Gentile and proclaim him as the hope of mankind, the only hope for the troubled world. I have been doing this for most of my life, sharing the good news for salvation through Jesus Christ with the people of the Middle East. For this, I was exiled from my home country of Egypt. For this, I have been named Islam's public enemy number one. For this, there is now a price on my head. But I love Jesus more than my life. And because Jesus loves Muslims, because he came and laid down his life to save them, I love them too. And I am willing to lay my life down, if necessary, to reach them for my beloved Jesus.
Nobody else talks like this in Saudi Arabia, in Iran, in Egypt, in Morocco. So people tune in because they can't believe what he's going to say next. But the radicals tune in, and they are absolutely infuriated. And they, once a week, Father Zechariah takes live call-ins, and he'll get people, Muslim clerics, calling in and screaming at him, telling him why he's an evil man and why he's wrong. But he challenges them point by point, verse by verse, from the Quran, as well as from the Bible.
The God of the Bible is moving powerfully in the Muslim world today. He is drawing Muslims out of Islam, of faith to faith in Jesus Christ in record numbers. Yes, there is much bad news in the Muslim world today. But there is also much more good news for Muslims. More Muslims have come to faith in Jesus Christ in the last 3 decades than in the last 14 centuries of Islam put together. This is the greatness of our great God.
Father Zechariah's ministry is seeing so many Muslims calling and emailing and writing into their ministry saying they become followers of Christ that Al-Qaeda has actually put Father Zechariah's photo on one of their websites as one of the most wanted men in the world. And at this point, we believe that there is now a $60 million bounty on Father Zechariah's head from those radical Islamic jihadists. Now, just to put that into perspective, the United States has put a $25 million bounty on the head of Osama bin Laden. So you can see how much the radicals want this guy silenced, and yet he has become the phenomenon in satellite television throughout the Muslim world.
While radio and satellite TV is effective, revivalists say millions of Muslims are actually becoming followers of Jesus Christ after having dreams and visions of Jesus Christ himself. During a research trip to Iraq, Rosenberg interviewed an Iraqi businessman named Daniel, who'd been raised a Muslim but had become a follower of Jesus Christ after seeing a series of visions.
In 1985, one night I was sleeping on my right side, and then he saw a man with white hair. 3 times he repeated the same sentence in
classical Arabic.
Stand up, Daniel, go to Jesus Christ. I could not continue sleeping. I stayed awake till morning, and I was thinking all the time, what was this vision? I asked one of my friends, telling him that I saw this vision twice. This person answered him, hallelujah, seems that you are a blessed, chosen person.
Daniel's friend takes him to a church. There, Daniel receives a copy of the New Testament. The pastor explains to him that Jesus Christ loves him. Daniel was convinced. He went home and prayed to receive Jesus Christ into his heart.
I continued twice a week to go to this church, and I felt that I was growing spiritually, so they were very happy with me and they baptized me.
During the violent insurgency underway throughout Iraq, Daniel has been living in a hotel in Baghdad for several months on business until something horrible happens.
Two of these people, they were on behind me. Both of them, they pulled pistols. One of them put it in my back and kidney. The other one on my neck. Any movement you do or any word you will utter, we will kill you here and leave you. Brought a bus, and when I was climbing the steps, I felt this is a bus. They drove for about 7 minutes. They opened the door. They asked me to step down. I stepped till my right feet was touching the ground. Somebody pointed his pistol at the left side of my head.
Daniel had just been shot in the left temple by a radical Islamic terrorist. An extraordinary moment, but this was not the end of the story.
I was bleeding all the way from the wound and from my nose. I start seeing visions. I saw two hands coming towards me. He pulled me up till I was standing face to face, and he placed my head on his chest.
Okay, we don't have time to share the rest of that story, but again, a doctor was there and took him to the hospital, and he was healed. And it's an amazing story. Again, a witness for Christ. Again, people seeing dreams of knowing Christ. Chaos in the Middle East is on purpose, folks. God has a plan to stir up the Middle East. They've been living on oil and free lunch for a long time, and now it's time to come to Christ. God is moving around the world. That's what we're talking about in this show. Satellite, 50 million people from this Egyptian Coptic preaching. We've had other evidence of that with movie producers come back, talk about everybody has a satellite, everybody has a cell phone. They can watch and they can see. Here's a booming story about on Fox News about what's happening in China. This happened just a little before the Olympics took place, but Ralph Reed commenting. Let's listen in on this.
When it comes to religion in China, Christianity is booming. Christian churches, once taboo in the communist country, now have reportedly about 70 million members. So is China on its way to accommodating religious beliefs? Joining me now is the former executive director of the Christian Coalition, Ralph Reed. Hi there, Ralph. Communist country has atheism as its sort of official policy, if you will. But now they have an official Christian church. How did this all happen?
Well, China has always been something of a paradox and a riddle for Americans. I mean, it's an officially communist country that is increasingly embracing capitalism and free enterprise. It is, as you said, an officially atheist country that has arguably one of the most robust churches anywhere in the world. You mentioned the figure of 70 million Christians in China. Some figures go as high as 130 million. And I think what we're really seeing, Heather, and the Olympics are really putting a spotlight on it, you cannot put the genie back in the bottle once you allow some measure of any kind of liberty. And when you allow cultural exchanges, and we have hundreds of thousands of Chinese students who have come here and then gone back home, there's an exchange of ideas, there's an exchange of democratic values, the internet is exploding, and Christianity is part of that flowering of liberty that I don't think the communist government is going to be able to snuff out.
Right. Well, there are two levels of churches there, if you will. There's the official church, where the pastors are sanctioned by the government, but then there's this whole system of underground churches, and that's believed to be bigger than the members of the official church.
No question about it. And President Bush, who, as you know, gave a very tough speech this week in Thailand, really calling the Chinese government to task, calling on them to respect the striving that is in every person's soul to worship God as he or she understands him to be. He had requested to be able to worship at a house church. Mm. There are some estimates that there are as many 25 million people to 50 million people in these home churches. And it was unfortunate that he was denied that opportunity. But if you talk to anybody who's gone to China, whether as a missionary or a business person or on a cultural exchange, they will tell you, Heather, that particularly in the rural parts of China, the church is literally exploding, and it's in many ways exploding in the open.
But, Ralph, it's important to point out that some of these underground churches, the men and women who lead those churches are sometimes apparently harassed, sometimes they're arrested. What is that all about?
Well, there's no question about the fact that the Chinese government is extremely worried about where this leads. They worry about a religion displacing the communist ideology, which I think it is. And that's why it's so important for the United States to continually, repeatedly, press the Chinese on respect for human rights, democratic values, religious freedom, and the dreaded and inhumane one-child policy. So I see good signs, but our government has got to keep the heat on. We have a very complex and complicated relationship with China. I don't believe in isolationism, but I think we need to engage them.
Okay, Ralph Reed, thank you. Former executive director of the Christian Coalition. Thanks for helping us take a look at all the stuff that's surrounding the Olympics, which includes religion.
Again, exciting what's happening in China. There is absolute revival in China. Estimates as high as 140 million recently. People who are born again Christians come to Christ. Three different kinds of churches there. They've got now even a state sanctioned church. It looks like a typical Protestant church. Even the people wear gowns, very orderly. And then you have the rural churches where it's evangelism, it's singing, it's praising, it's enthusiasm. You even have that in the inner city now with young people meeting in office buildings where they're having church services there, and great enthusiasm for the Lord. And again, a heart booming in China. Again, 2002, Zhang Chao came, did a study, atheist professor from, came back a born-again Christian studying the United States, and said that, told the Chinese government not to fear the Christians because they'll pray for their government leaders. But liberty is what we need, and we need order and rules. And what the thing that influences America the most is its churches. It's its cornerstone of belief and faith and trust. Whether everyone knows it or not or believes it or not, it's of God. Our Constitution, 40% of it is taken directly from the Bible itself. God has a plan. He's bringing the world closer together. He's bringing revival. He's bringing, again, Muslims, Chinese, again, atheists. We're going to talk about Hindus and even Jewish people to Christ. It's amazing what God's doing. All right, let's go ahead and share this story of a Sunni Muslim personal story about how he became a Christian pastor, but raised in one of these Muslim homes. His name is David Diga Hernandez, and now he's an evangelist. His father moved him to Jerusalem as a young boy from America, born in America, to learn Islam and to serve Allah. Yet the Christian, when he went to church, you know, he went to church with some people because they wanted to go to McDonald's and they were going to church afterwards. He said, sure, I'll tag along. And did he know? He didn't know that he was going to get be touched by the Spirit of God at that meeting. He sat there torn. Let's listen to his testimony. Torn. Let's listen to his testimony.
So to settle the situation, I got up in this church in Jerusalem. I got out of the sanctuary. I went downstairs. I faced towards Mecca. And I did my Islamic prayers. And I, you know, when you taste something so sweet and then you contrast it with something so bitter, the sweet becomes sweeter and the bitter becomes all the more bitter. And that's what happened in this prayer. So I went from seeing this amazing, glorious presentation of a God who loved his people and the people who loved their God to praying and hearing crickets. And at that point, I was so angry. I said, you know what? I finished the prayer. I was on my knees. I said, whoever you are, with tears rolling down my face, I said, whoever you are, whether you're the God of the Quran, I sure as heck hope that you see this struggle, because I'm losing this one, man. I'm trying to do your job, and this is not working out. I'm trying to hold on to Islam by the skin of my teeth, trying to want it to be real. I said, but if you are Jesus, who they say, who these people who are happy are believing, whatever the truth is, I'm going to find it. So I got up and I went back to sit in my pew, back corner, and suddenly I wasn't angry anymore. I was actually observing and I was appreciating that these people had reached a place in their relationship with God that I was desiring for so long, and that I still know people who are desiring it and they don't have it. And it, all it is praying to one named Jesus, not in the name of Allah. I don't know what to tell Muslims anymore. I had a woman not too long ago with tears rolling down her face. She was She was almost begging me, come back to Islam, come back to Islam. And I'm like, come back to what? I don't know what to come back to. What do I do with the healings I've seen? What now? It's me telling the story. Remember that four-hour conversation? Now it's me telling them, what do I do with the healings that Jesus healed me and healed other people? What do I do when He answered prayer? What do I do when the Bible was so real to me? What do I do when I needed a word from God to save the direction of my life and God answered it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And it's when you talk about that struggle inside of you, that warfare that took place, it's almost as if something deep down in your spirit connected with truth and you said, that's what I want. And that Hazm, the spirit Hazm, broke through religious barriers in your soul. And it's exciting to see that, and it's exciting to hear you talk about this, because I like to say that when a man goes blind, the world does not disappear. Neither does the truth when a man refuses to believe it. And you knew the truth. Nice. You wanted the truth so badly to be Islam.
Yeah, I did.
I mean, just the way you just, I can feel your yearning. Oh God, please be real. And take us to that place now where it connected and you knew in that moment.
It was the next day after that night when I was in the church. And when I said to whoever you are, if you are the God of Islam, I'm needing you to do something, because I'm being lost to this Jesus. But if you are Jesus, I'm going to find you. It was the next day I went up to the family and I said, mind you, I don't know what this is. I don't understand it, but this is what happened. I tried to say, I want to become I was trying to say Christian. I couldn't say it. It literally would not come out of my mouth. And for 40 minutes, I was struggling to say the word, I want to become a, and it just wasn't coming out. He said, finally, Hazm, he said, I have to go. If you're going to tell me, you have to tell me now. With all the energy and all the, whatever it was that was keeping me from saying it, I finally broke through that. I said, I want to become a Christian. And it was like, when I did that, it was like, I'm alive. I actually lived through that right there. You can live through this process. They ended up having an appointment with me. It was a couple days after that. I, on my knees on the second floor in Jerusalem, I prayed for the first time in the name of Jesus. And it was like all of that struggle, all of that, whatever that was keeping me from, all that fear that kept me from wanting to say Christian, it was now, I was having to tame my spirit and my, I literally had no, I wanted to jump, scream, shout, and I didn't want the Christians to think I was crazy. I didn't know that Christians jump, scream, and shout praising the Lord, you know. So it was, that was the day, man.
And the truth shall set you free.
I was set free. I literally, my countenance changed. Completely, my life changed.
Take a minute and talk to not just people in Islam, because I know we're not attacking any specific religion here. You know, God has love for everyone.
Yes.
But take a minute to talk to somebody who is fighting a philosophical truth, or fighting a religious belief, or fighting a cultural stamp that they've had on them for their entire lives. Talk to them, because you went through that. Take 1 minute and talk to that person, say whatever you want to say to them about coming over to the truth.
It's never easy. If it was easy, then the whole world would go the same way, but it's not. But what I can promise you, the struggling seeker, is that this process is worth the fight. It's worth it, man. My family ended up disowning me. My culture has just abandoned me. Everything I knew as who I was failed. But there was one who kept me through that. I often say, if I didn't have a true savior and a redeemer, I would have lost my mind, or I would have committed suicide. Today, you don't have to lose your mind and you don't have to commit suicide. You don't have to feel like there's no life left to live. Isaiah 65:1 says, God is saying through the mouth of Isaiah, he says, behold, I made myself known to people who weren't even looking for me. I said to a people, here I am, to those who were not called by my name. Today, whether you're Islamic, whether you're Jewish, whether you're atheist, I want you to know that God is calling. He's saying to you right now, here I am, here I am. You may not even expect this, but I guarantee you, if you walk this out with Jesus, He'll walk it out with you. I'm not promising you, you know, fun and roses every day, but I am promising you that your problems will not have you any longer. You'll have problems, but they won't have control over you.
Wow, what a story. He's talking about bitterness. was gone. Emptiness was gone. He felt the freedom in Christ as he committed his life to the Lord. And he could finally say the word Christian. He could finally say it. Now he can say it every day without any problem, of course. So it's events like this. He said there's no more feeling of suicide, no more feeling of condemnation. But it, you know, the patterns of God are that he has to allow negative for people to get humble enough or to get broken enough to seek him, to seek his ways and know the ways of God. It doesn't come, like he says, it doesn't come easy. And while it's free, and there's no cost to it financially, it does cost your life. It costs your life to give it up for God, because he gave his life for us. Again, God is moving in the world. He's moving to the Middle East. He's moving in China. He's moving in India. We're going to talk about an Indian lady here in the second half of our show, a Jewish lady here in the United States, a woman who was a lesbian, and how she promoted that whole lifestyle through her marketing and her publicity. Again, coming to Christ is the answer. God's moving on the world. He's bringing us together. Again, this is John Beener. You listen to Inspiration 316. And the theme of this today's show is a world coming to Christ. We're showing you varieties. Some of these stories we've used before, but the idea is to show you and demonstrate to you through the testimonies of other people, because God's a spirit of love, truth, and light. And there's fruit in that spirit. In other words, it brings joy and peace. And God changes people's circumstances, changes their lives. Again, God has a plan for all of us. We're going to head out of here and take a little break here. We've got the third day singing along with Brandon Heath about the creed, God's creed. It's an incredible song. Listen in.
He was conceived by the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, he was crucified.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. Seems that wherever Donald Trump goes, the hecklers follow. That was the case today at a Super Tuesday rally in Columbus, Ohio.
Which is this group here? Get them out of here. Get them out. Out, 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 out.
Trump is criticizing GOP rival Marco Rubio for his sudden turn to negative campaigning. Trump saying that Rubio should drop out of the race if he doesn't win a single Super Tuesday state. Senator Ted Cruz, also in the race for the Republican nomination, says the GOP needs a candidate to unite the party.
I believe it would be an enormous mistake to nominate Donald Trump, and so I speak to unity for Republicans, that let's come together and stand together behind the conservative principles, the free market principles, and constitutional liberties that we believe in.
The New Hampshire newspaper that gave New Jersey Governor Chris Christie one of his biggest boosts ahead of the state's primary now says it made a big mistake. New Hampshire union leader publisher Joseph McQuaid says in an editorial today, "We were wrong." The editorial comes after Christie, who ended his bid after a disappointing finish in the state, threw his support behind Donald Trump. Also at SRNNews.com, FBI Director James Comey defending the Bureau's attempt to force Apple to break the encryption on an iPhone that was used by one of the San Bernardino terrorists.
This case in San Bernardino is not about the FBI, it's not about Apple, it's not about Congress, it's not about anything other than trying to do a competent investigation in an ongoing active case.
The FBI chief testifying earlier today on Capitol Hill. Apple says developing software to break encryption would jeopardize the privacy of millions of iPhone users. On Wall Street, shortly before the close, stocks sharply higher. The Dow's up about 321 points. The S&P 500 index ahead 43. This is SRN News.
Traffic and weather on the truth.
The right lane is blocked with a disabled vehicle, 295 North, just before San Jose Boulevard. 25 miles an hour now on 295 southbound, Butler to Bay Meadows. 30 miles an hour, 295 northbound, 95 to Blanding. 35 miles an hour, Butler westbound, 295 to 95. Fair skies tonight, low around 59. For Wednesday, we start cloudy but then clearing and a high of 76. 45 for Wednesday night, sun on Thursday, high of 73. Well, welcome back. This is John Beener. Listen to Inspiration 316 show. We're going to bring you back here with Third Day and Brandon Heath talks singing about creed.
I believe in God.
Jesus Christ is only begotten Son of the Lord. He was conceived by the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary.
Oh, God help me. How do I do this?
Suffered under Pontius Pilate. He was crucified and dead and buried. And I believe what I believe.
Okay. Again, welcome back. This is John Bean. You're listening to Inspiration 316 Show. The theme for today's show is a world coming to Christ. It's happening. We listened earlier about stories of Muslims, again, and great Egyptian cleric, 50 million viewers on satellite. China, 140 million people come to Christ in the last 10, 15 years. And Muslim leaders, again, we're going to talk about Hindus, Jewish people, lesbian people. Again, we're sponsored by Sun Tire today. Dick Erickson, I want to share a little bit of what his story is about giving back to the community and how he does that. This is John Beaner again. I'm with Dick Erickson. Dick, thanks for sponsoring our show, Inspiration 316. Love to tell the listeners more about your views about supporting the community and giving and being directed toward by God in terms of the things you do to be effective in business, and share some of your thoughts on that for us, can you?
Well, I think, John, thank you for we're happy to support what you're doing here, and I think we all have certain talents, and it appeared after a while that maybe mine was in fact running a business. Uh-huh. And part of knowing whether you're doing well in business, or if you're in business, you should be making a profit. And then how do we deal with profits? And then the income that I derive from running the business, how do we deal with that once we take care of the staples and, you know, as we get started? So anyhow, when I finally came to the realization that I'm really a steward of the assets that I'm working with every day, and it's for the good Lord that we're doing this, and how he, if I'm open to him directing me, you know, kind of die to myself, and it isn't Dick Erickson, is how am I led to deal with his assets? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of conflict in that at times. You know, yeah. Everyone wants their
fair, in the world.
Yes, yeah, in the is. World. You yeah. know, I want this, and they want that, yeah. and I want more pay, and different things in how we run our business to be in properly aligned to what the Lord wants us to do, and that's right. That's a constant in prayer or whatever, you know,
seeking.
Not what
yeah.
seeking.
Yeah, I understand.
So
that. Yeah.
that's been, and so there's some people that can give, it's more of a time element, or they're supporting in different ways of what the Lord needs. Mm-hmm. And ours is that I sense is it's a dollar and cents sometimes. What can we give to the needs out there? Mm-hmm. And so as we, here I am 72 and probably should be out of this type of business, or out of business, but I'm still motivated to stay with it. And as the business has continued to grow, we've had more of his assets to share out through our charity work and things of that
opportunities,
sort.
Opportunities, yeah, to do that. And I know you share your profitability with your employees. And so when we talked earlier, you said there's over 40 different ministries and nonprofits that you support through their efforts in the community. That's pretty phenomenal. And encourage your employees to do the same thing with the revenues they get and such.
And we're in an industry that it isn't a high-paid industry as far as some of the worker bees. And so we know that they're limited on what they can do, but if we can, in fact, take some of the assets of the company to pay them properly,
right.
But still how we utilize the funding of the assets to ensure that we're supporting, and what's heaviest on our heart, my heart, my wife's heart, you know, is to evangelize. How can we support the things that where people are out talking about the good Lord doing things, and to support those people, whether it's missionaries. We've got a couple of missionaries that we do monthly support of. And that's not, I haven't found it easy at times to make sure I'm, you know,
doing the right thing.
Doing the right thing.
Sure. Again, Dick Erickson, who's our sponsor today, talking about doing the right things, again, sharing the economic strength they have, the viability with the community, support the community in godly ways, and carry the message of Jesus Christ and the love through their example, walking their talk. That's what it's all about. We're going to listen here to a Hindu woman. Again, how she came to Jesus is an interesting story. Let's listen in with how this happened.
Neelu's family had severe financial problems because of medical bills.
We had all kinds of problems and sicknesses. We prayed to Hindu gods and saints, but nothing worked. Instead of spending money on our children, we spent it on rituals.
Neelu's sister told her about Jesus and asked her to watch a CBN show called Ekne Zindagi.
When I watched the program, I saw how people from all walks of life were being healed from all sorts of diseases, even cancer, just through the power of prayer. Whatever the problem was, whether financial, mental, or physical, it could all be solved through prayer. So I started to believe that Jesus Christ is the one and only true God, and that He could forgive all my sins.
But Neelu struggled to break away from the God she had worshipped for more than 40 years.
So I prayed that the God who created this whole world, the true God who had given me life, would appear to me. I also prayed to all my idols and asked them to show themselves to me if they were real.
That night, Neelu's prayer was answered. Jesus Christ appeared to her in a dream.
He appeared on a wall and told me, "Behold, I am here. You prayed at night and called out to me, and see, I have come to you." In my dream, I was shouting with happiness to my daughter and husband, "See, see, Jesus has answered my prayer. He is the way. He's the true God." In the morning, I was filled with joy.
Neelu's family also put their faith in Jesus. As they prayed, one by one, they were healed of their sicknesses. They paid off their medical bills, and they're now debt-free.
There will never come a problem that He cannot solve. Now we feel that all doors are open, and there is hope because our Lord Jesus Christ is with us. Today we lead Bible studies in our home, and people are being blessed. There's no greater happiness in my life. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for the CBN program Ek Nayi Zindagi. It brought us out of darkness and into the light.
Again, that's an Indian woman named Neelu who has watched the CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network show, and was moved and believed that Hinduism was not the right way after hearing the stories and the testimonies and seeing the healings that were taking place from people that were calling in on Christian Broadcasting Network. Again, she had a dream of knowing Christ when she called out to Him. She called out and she was healed physically. Her family was healed. Her finances were fixed. God has a plan. God's in the healing business, the turnaround business. He brings life, joy to everyone's circumstances when you make a personal commitment to Him. Not just about Christianity as a religion, which is wonderful and good, solid teaching there, good biblical principles. And that's part of why our economy is so great, is because we treat each other with the golden rule. More often than not, God has a plan again. But it's about a personal relationship that brings joy, peace, and love, the fruit of the Spirit. Let's listen to a Jewish lawyer who has an amazing story, an amazing journey to listen to.
I remember having a conversation with my mother, and she was encouraging me to go to bed early so I'd get a good night's sleep. And so I said, "Ma, why? Why should I go to bed and get a good night's sleep?" She said, "So you can get up and be refreshed in the morning and do well in school." I said, "Why do I need to do well in school?" She says, "So you can go to a good college." I said, "Why do I need to go to a good college?" She said, "So you can get a good job." "Why do I need to get a good job?" "So you can have a family and have a house and have the nice things of life." And I said, "Well, okay, if I have all those things, then what?" She goes, then nothing, that's it." I said, "Is that all there is?" Being the only son of a Jewish mother, I was made to feel like I was the center of the universe. It was all about me. And then in the world, when it wasn't about me, it was shocking to me. And I wanted it to be about me. I sought the approval and the affirmation and the confirmation of these things from other people. that in fact it was about me and that I was the center of the universe. I went to a private school and we had to study the life of Jesus at that private school. And I didn't like Jesus, but I wanted to hear from my own rabbi why we don't believe in Jesus. And he explained to me that he couldn't be the Messiah because when Messiah comes, he'll bring peace. And since Jesus has already come and there is no peace, he could not be the Messiah. And that satisfied me for about 7 years. And I was totally satisfied with that answer. It made sense to me. In college, I became a theoretical Marxist. I believed that that what the world needed was radical social change, that instead of people competing against each other in the marketplace, that government would come and would create an equal playing field, and even more than that, create equal outcomes for everyone in the culture. If we could get rid of the competitiveness and the adversarial relationship that I saw in the culture, and we could work towards cooperation, we could create a better world together. And I really wanted to make a better world. That was my, I saw this as a source of significance and purpose in my life, that I could help bring about a better world for mankind. The only problem with my convictions about social change and making a better world was the problem of the brokenness in people. My own personal brokenness, I saw that. My own selfishness, my own pride, my own lust, my own greed, all of those things in my life. And I saw that in other people. I saw it in the world around me. And if there was something wrong with us, if there was something wrong with people, then changing social systems wouldn't make any difference. It would just be the same thing over and over again. So in my freshman year of college, I hear a knock on my door. I open the door, and there's a young man there. He looks at me, he goes, "Hi, my name's Paul, and I'd like to talk to you about establishing a personal relationship with Jesus Christ." I thought, whoa, it took me by surprise, and I said, "I'm sorry, I'm Jewish." He goes, "That's okay, so is he." I said, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I said, "Come on in." So I invited him in the room. I invited some of my Jewish friends from down the hall to come join us. And then he began to explain to us why Jesus was the Jewish Messiah. So the questions that I came to college with stayed with me. And I realized if there was no God, there was no hope. That led me on a quest, on a search. And in the process of that search, I came across the prophecy in the 53rd chapter of Isaiah. And I remember reading it and thinking to myself, what's Jesus doing in my Bible? I was surprised as I read it that this was from the prophet Isaiah, the Jewish prophet. And I said, what's Jesus doing in my Bible? And I began to think, why didn't the rabbi tell me about this? Why didn't he tell me that there was a picture of Messiah other than Messiah bringing peace, but a Messiah that was going to suffer and die for us? After college, in order to make extra money, I worked nights and weekends for a kosher caterer in Boston. One night, April 30th, 1980, I was at Temple Sinai in Marblehead, Massachusetts. I was there for a donor dinner, serving a donor dinner. I was asked if I would pack up the truck so everybody else could go home and just I would be left. And I said, fine. So everybody else left. The ladies had their fundraiser inside the shul, and I was outside with a cup of coffee and a cigarette and just thinking about life. All of a sudden, inside the synagogue, the women started praying. Their prayers began to remind me of my own searching and my own struggle, my own journey that I was on. And I started thinking about Jewish history, and I started thinking about David, and I started thinking about Jesus. Is Jesus the Messiah? Is it really important who the Messiah is? Is Jesus the Son of God? Is he God? Did he ever say he was God? Couldn't he have just meant that he was close to God and intimate with God? And I said, what difference does that make with the name of God? It's as long as we live a good life. And as I'm thinking these things, I'm walking around the temple parking lot, and I get to the end of the parking lot, and I look up, and before me is a gathering of light, and the light forms a figure of a man, and the man is all in light, and he's in front of a cross, not on the cross, but in front of a cross, and it's all brightly illuminated in front of me, about 20 yards away from me, as big as life. And I looked up and I saw the figure, and I said, oh my God, it's Jesus Christ. And my hands are shaking, and I'm shaking my head on the way home. Did I really see this? Did I really see this? And it scared me so much, I decided to try to put it out of my mind. So I spent the next couple of weeks just partying and going out to bars and just trying to forget about what had happened. And I did this for a couple of weeks of getting drunk and trying to forget. I woke up one morning, I was living at home at the time, and I woke up in the morning and I was getting my orange juice in the kitchen, and my mother looks at me and says, "Rich, what are you running from?" So I came to realize that I wasn't the center of the universe, that God was, that it wasn't about me, it was about Him. And it was about me investing my life in His purposes that He had for me. And that gave me such a feeling of meaning and purpose in my life that it was beyond anything that I could have dreamt for. I never thought I'd get the answers. I never thought that those were the kinds of things that there were answers to. But now I realize that there's a God and that He loves me, and that love sets me free to love and serve others, to love and serve Him. Today I'm married to my beautiful wife, Michelle, who happens to be Italian. I thought it was more important to marry a girl that shared my faith in Jesus than it was to marry a Jewish girl. We have three wonderful boys, Joshua 27, Micah 26, and Zach 23. They all have come in their place in their life where they have asked Jesus to be their Messiah and Lord, and they are walking with Him, and so we're very proud of them. I'm teaching as a professor in a graduate school in New York City, and really enjoy, delight in being able to share my experience and my journey in my life with these young people in the context of a learning environment.
Great story. You know, here's a guy who was raised in a Jewish family, obviously, and found the Messiah. Found out the Messiah is alive. He's true. He's working in everybody's life, whether they know Him or not. He is alive. And the whole thing about his rabbi telling him, no, Jesus is not the Messiah because we don't have peace on earth yet. Well, we do have peace in our hearts if we have committed our hearts to Jesus Christ, because He says the fruit of the Spirit is love, peace, and joy in your heart. Enthusiasm, you know, love for one another, even loving your enemies and loving your spouse when your spouse doesn't love you, loving your teacher when she doesn't love you or he doesn't love you, or your boss or your neighbors. You know, God has a plan. He's working in people's lives, whether they know it or not. He's bringing the world together. He is bringing the world together. That's the theme of our show today, is what is God doing around the world? The actual title is A World Coming to Christ. We talked, again, from people in the Middle East and Muslims, and we've talked about the Chinese, Hindus, now Jewish people. And there's a website, I Know the Messiah, where there's 50 of these kinds of stories and testimonies up there. You should visit them. Again, if you have Jewish friends to share with them. Next story is Charlene Cothran, who really was involved in the gay lesbian movement for many years. It chose that lifestyle. I want to hear how she changed and came to Christ. Let's listen to some of her story.
As I look back, I see that the devil deceived me, and he deceived many, many thousands and thousands of others into believing that we could be happy. You know, that's the deception, that this is a happy life. This is a gay life. This is a gay pride. We are happy. None of that is true. None of that is true. I began to organize social events for lesbians of color at the time. Myself and I had two other business partners, and we were a perfect fit. We would rent restaurants and invite women to come and sort of amass a mail list. And women would come from all over the region. And on any holiday night, the group was called Hospitality Atlanta. It would not be odd to have 700-800 women exclusively packed into a beautiful restaurant with, we hired police at the door and would not let a man in. And from those events, we had softball leagues and softball teams and major, you know, picnics and whatnot. It was just a great, at that time, we thought, organization. We made a lot of money. And we did that for nearly 10 years. And when we got older and decided we didn't want to do it anymore, you know, I decided, well, what are we going to do with this mail list? And from that mail list, I decided to launch a magazine. The gay and lesbian political community began to pay attention to the fact that we could bring numbers of black lesbians and gays together through the work that we were doing. And then when the magazine was launched, surely we began to get contacted by HRC, Human Rights Campaign, and the Victory Fund, and many of the gay organizations who are doing a lot of work right now. And it was a very important part in the early 90s of the work that they were doing, because at that time they were being told by local politicians and regional politicians and national politicians that, okay, you guys are a group of rich white gay men, and you want us to change laws just for you. No, we don't see a coalition of people here. So it was important then to be able to raise up or show a Charlene Cothran or a Venus magazine to say, oh no, there's a huge, vibrant black gay community. Look at that through the pages of Venus magazine. So we were an important part of what they were trying to present. The strategy is always to get one little foot in the door, when in fact, the plan means we're going to take over the whole thing. Well, why don't we just get a statement, Mr. School Board President, in your school board policy that you simply acknowledge the fact that we will not fire a gay teacher, or that there may be some gay students that we're going to be okay with, you know, not trying not to be prejudiced toward them through our policy. We just want one little statement in the booklet, when in fact the plan is to take over the whole school system, as we see now 15 years later is happening. There's always just, you know, that's the strategy, just to get in under the wire, and then once you get enough of our people in, then to do some major work. Here I am in the middle of a 10-year relationship with another woman, and we're living together in New York, and my grandmother is now living with us, and my life changed in so many ways. I wasn't able to get to all those functions I used to run and go to. I was barely getting Venus out, but God was showing me what eternity looks like. Because when I had to bury my mother, I had a decision to make about a plot to buy, okay? My mom, my grandmother is my responsibility. And then I've got to go. I'm unmarried, you know, whatever. But I bought a 3-grave plot in our family cemetery. And it was a huge reminder to me when I would go and put flowers on my mother's grave that's where my mother's going to be. That's where my mother is. This is where my grandmother's going to be. And this is where you're going to be. And when you look at, you know, your mortality, it really forces you to think about what's beyond this grave. And I was forced to think about that. And having, again, that seed of righteousness that was way down in me from, again, that 12-year-old got saved experience, and being forced now at 42 to say, where are you really going to spend eternity? Just getting buried in this ground is not it. That is not over. What's going to happen after that? And that may come sooner than you think. That began to change the way I saw the gay life. Now, did I continue to publish the magazine? Yes. And I went to some, you know, events? Yes. But I saw that people were not paying attention to the ever after. In fact, they avoided it. And I was never one to go to a gay church. You know, that just never sat well with me. I knew it wasn't real. I knew that was not the God of my understanding, the only God there is. And I could not get in line with that. So I just didn't go to church very often, except to a family gathering or function. But facing my mortality, looking at my mortality, forced me to begin to think about things that are spiritual. And then there were times, you know, in my soul that I wanted someone to share with me how I could get out of this captivity that I was in. I mean, certainly I had the knowledge of Christ, but I did not know that I could be free in my flesh again. I always struggled with that. Can I ever be free in my flesh? Can I ever not want a woman? Can I ever not look at a woman and desire her? Can I ever break free of that?
Amazing story again. Yes, she did break free of it. She committed her life to Christ, troubled, frustrated, but sought the Lord. It reversed her life. She then started to eventually get out of the gay movement, of course. And then they had a conference where she was to speak and tell how she got started. She did that. And then she told everybody there at the conference, "I'm changing. I'm leaving the gay lifestyle. I believe in Jesus Christ. He's the answer to all of my needs. He's the one that's bringing me peace, love, and joy." It rocked the boat of that conference. But then she had people coming up afterwards and say, "Gosh, how did you do that? I want to do that. I feel unworthy in this gay lifestyle." Anyway, amazing story. A lot more depth to that. Again, these are the stories you don't find in the media. Again, this is the stories that the media won't share. They're the truth of Jesus Christ. He is reality. He is bringing the world together. That's where our theme of our show is today, a world coming to Christ. And we talked about Muslims. We talked about Chinese. We talked about Hindus, Jewish people, again, gays and lesbians coming to Christ. God has a plan. He uses negative to turn it into positive. Again, if people reach out to him and seek him in a way that will allow him to open their hearts and bring them love, peace, and joy that will surpass all understanding. Again, this is John Bean. You've been listening to the Inspiration 316 show. We're on every workday, every weekday, 4 to 5 p.m. here on The Truth 91.7. Thanks for joining us. Until the next day, God bless you. Appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Share us with other people.
Thanks for listening to the Inspiration 316 show with John Beaner. Join us each weekday at the same time. If you want to share your testimony, listen to past shows, or get a free book, visit us at our website, www.inspiration316.com.